I see a little hole, and it looks like this. What animal made this hole? I think it's a wormhole, and it's coming out again. Can you imagine what it would be like to see a skeleton of a leaf? One is long and skinny. The other one is like a shrunk leaf. This leaf has 43 big veins. I counted 100 sprouts coming out of my square. It also has a piece of mud. A bird just walked into my piece of string. It was light blue and had a touch of red and some white with dark blue. I see a red dot. It is this big. It might be a spider or a baby bug of some kind.
The author of those thoughts upon looking at one square foot of earth was Janelle. But it could be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program on the process of writing creatively. Conducting the program is children's author Jacqueline Jackson.
I never knew my grandfather on my mother's side, but I once asked my older cousin Paul about him. Paul said that Grandpa was the sort of man who was absorbed in anything. He could sit and look at a square foot of ground all morning and only begin to see everything there was to see in it, or to think about everything there was to think about. He could have kept busy all his life with one square foot of ground. I've sometimes thought that I inherited that from my grandfather, the ability to keep busy with a square foot of ground, because I was always a noticer, a watcher. I've put this kind of noticing of things into my books. One passage that I enjoyed when I wrote it, because so often as a child I lay and looked into water from a boat or from a dock, is this passage from the Paleface Redskins. Marcy is paddling around on the prow of a boat. The boat swished to a stop among the reeds that pushed their strong, straight stalks up between the bright pebbles. Minnie's no longer than her fingernail flitted to and fro, their bodies transparent and all their little red and blue insides exposed. Underwater insects bumbled around the hollow stems. Every depth of water, she mused, was a little world in itself, but from 2 to 6 inches in clear, reedy water was undoubtedly the most fascinating. Everything was so miniature. Tiny snails, tiny fish, tiny bugs, with only now and then a giant something making its startling appearance. Shallow water even had its own snake, seldom noticed, but there was one, black and properly named a hair snake, slowly twining itself in a fantastic knot around a reed. I remember a great pleasure of mine along around 5th or 6th grade was to find an anthill and lie down on the grass and spend a long time just watching the ants going about their business as they came in and out. I think some of my fascination had to do with a book which had been left in the bathroom for some time called Ants by Julian Huxley, which explained a great deal about ant society, and I sometimes wondered which member of the tribe I was watching. But it was very pleasurable with the sun beating on my back and to watch the small creatures down there in the grass. I think that all my own kids are noticers. Lately, Elspeth's been reading some books called the Rollo books, and I read out of a Rollo book on this program recently about Rollo learning to read and his father telling him how hard work it was to learn to read and that you mustn't play and this sort of thing. These books were written over 125 years ago. The book that Elspeth was just reading, Rollo was much younger. In fact, he was a baby. And his parents were giving him lessons in looking, starting out right after he was born. And these lessons consisted in first keeping the curtains drawn so that the sunlight would not offend his tender eyes, and then as he became more able to see, drawing the curtains and then showing him various objects and helping him to hold his attention on these objects. And Elspeth read this out loud to me with some interest, and I discussed it with her, and I said I thought it seemed a little silly because I remembered noticing Demi, who was the firstborn of our four girls, discovering her hand. in her crib and watching it with intense interest for a long, long time, turning it every which way, not knowing, I'm sure, that it was her hand, but that just some fascinating object had suddenly presented itself in front of her eyes. I thought to myself, every baby learns to see, to look. I mentioned it to my co-teacher in History of Children's Literature, where we've been reading the Rollo books, and he is the expert on the Jacob Abbott Rollo books. And he said, oh, all that stuff in the Rollo books is based on a very early educator named Pestalozzi. And they did have lessons in looking and in seeing. Well, I thought about looking at that point, and I thought, you know, I'm wrong, that it is an art to look at things. I remember seeing a circus when I was a kid, and the frustration. There were three rings, and there was too much to see, and a confusion of sights, and I didn't know what to look at. And my main remembrance of that circus was a headache, a stomach ache, and utter, utter frustration. There's an interesting story by C.S. Lewis, who wrote the Narnia series, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The short story is called The Shoddy Lands. And it's a fantasy, and a man enters into a certain land, and he finds that everything looks very vague and shoddy, and when he looks at certain things, they're badly put together, and the edges are fuzzy, and they look just awful, and as if they have been badly made, sloppily made. But every now and then, he comes on something that is excellently made, beautifully made. Certain flowers are there in all their perfection. Certain other things, mostly items of clothing and so forth. And the outcome of the story is that he has somehow entered the mind of a rather shallow woman. And he is seeing what she sees. And everything that she sees in perfection, jewels, certain kinds of flowers, shoes, clothing, those are the things that she really notices and looks at, whereas the trees look like trees made by a kindergartner, sort of a blob on the top and a stick down below and things of that sort. And whereas it's a commentary on this sort of person, and I think it could be male, female, adult, or child, it's also a commentary on how we look at things. I read in a magazine once, a few years ago, of somebody's idea for writing. Go and look at a square foot of ground and then write about it. And it reminded me of my grandfather, who could spend an indefinite amount of time looking at a square foot of ground. And so I tried it recently with a college class of students, and we had a lot of fun with it. I gave them each a string that was 4 feet long, and we knotted it in the middle, and then we knotted it again so that we had a square foot if it were laid out. And I told them to go lay it somewhere and spend an hour looking at what was within the confines of that string and then write something. I didn't tell them where to put it. I didn't tell them what to write about. And when we came back, we had quite a jolly time as everybody read their experiences. One person chose grass. Most people chose grass. But somebody did choose a rotten log. Somebody took a portion of sidewalk that included a crack. And one tacked hers upright on, I don't know as I should give you all the suggestions, because I'm hoping that this is something you might want to do. One person came armed with a ruler and tweezers and a magnifying glass, and we had a scientific study of her square foot of ground. Another person imagined what it would be like to be small enough, as Marcy did, looking down into the water, thinking of the miniature world. This person entered into bug and ant life. Another wrote not about the square of grass, but everything that grass reminded him of. The first birthday party that he recalled that was out on the grass. We were all delighted with each other's stuff. And so I thought, let's try it with Elspeth's class, where I was doing some work in creative writing. So I gave everybody a string, and I suggested, let's go out and look in our strings. And the thing didn't work very well. But I think I have some ideas why. Part of it is that some of those kids had never really looked. Betsy wrote, it was mostly litter. Then she showed me her paper, and I said, well, what sort of litter? And I looked at her square, and it was filled with fascinating stuff. There were twigs, there were bits of glass of many different colors and shapes. There were nutshells, some whole, some eaten, some having lasted through the winter and so forth. It was a very fascinating square, and so Betsy added on one more sentence. I saw glass and nuts. And I figured, well, Betsy, you need some exercises in looking. Angela, however, did considerably better. Here's Angela's. Well, here I am in a pile of leaves. This reminds me of a show called The Getaways. Oops, I mean The Runaways. Two kids run away, have to hide under a leaf pile because their parents are looking for them. There are some leaves here and a few twigs, too. Hey, here's a bug running across the square-inch string. Well, there's not much more to talk about except a few acorns. It sure is windy out here. I'm chilly. These leaves aren't very pretty. They're all dry and brown. There's one tiny flower sticking up from the leaves. That bug just darted out from under the leaves. Now he's out of the square. There isn't anything more, so I won't write anything more. I think another reason that we didn't do too well with our pieces of string was that so many of the kids didn't have any patience. They'd put their piece of string down. These were third graders. They would spend a couple of minutes looking at it, and then they'd decide, this square has no more promise, and they'd pick up their string and they'd move it someplace else. And so we spent most of our time moving our strings around from one place to another. There are other ways, of course, if the weather is bad or if you don't have places to put your string near your school, to look at things carefully. You can use a magnifying glass. We have a necklace of very tiny shells that our kids have discovered are beautiful. And they look at them through the magnifying glass, and they have their favorites. And sometimes I take this necklace to school along with a magnifying glass, and I give it to somebody, and I say, here, look at this. And at first bounce, the necklace looks sort of drab, sort of brownish and whitish and not very interesting. But as soon as somebody begins looking and discovers some of them are spotted, some of them are striped, some of them are spiraled, that the brown is various different colors of brown, they become fascinated with it, and they will often spend 10, 15, 20 minutes just examining this one little necklace with shells, each shell about half the size of your little fingernail, maybe smaller. You can look at things through a kaleidoscope, which is like a kaleidoscope, except that a kaleidoscope has stuff inside it that falls around and you see it in different patterns. Those are fun, too, for looking exercises. But the kaleidoscope uses the materials at hand. It's got a pattern of mirrors inside, and you shine it on somebody's jacket or on a piece of wallpaper or books, almost anything. When it gets divided up and multiplied and put into a pattern, gives you a fresh idea about that thing. You see skin, you see eyes, you see clothing in an entirely different way than you saw before. If you look at something upside down through your legs, you see the world in quite a different way. If you make a card and put a pinhole through the middle and view the world through a pinhole, it looks quite different too. So today, if you can, I'm suggesting that you take a 4-foot piece of string and put it somewhere. Maybe this is something you can do during recess or after school or for a home assignment. You might try to find a bed of moss, some bark, a puddle, an anthill, as I often love to do. Maybe there's a woodsy area or a little space of garden. An hour might be a long time to watch, but why don't you see if you could manage a half an hour? And when you go, take a piece of paper and a pencil and something hard to write on, and if it's a windy day, better paper clip your paper to whatever hard it is, or you'll spend your time chasing your paper rather than looking at your square of ground or whatever. And don't start writing immediately. Look for a while. And after you've looked, then write. You can write about what you see. You can write about how you feel about what you see. You can write about what you imagine. There's no limit to the sort of thing that you can write when you are looking at 1 square foot of ground. But I suggest that you stay separate and alone with your string, your spot, and your own thoughts.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your thoughts on one square foot of something to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.